This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. Only sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Today would have been John Lennon's 70th birthday, so Imagine is a fitting tribute. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. John Lennon's birthday was October the 9th, and this is the weekend of October 9th and 10th, 2010.
And we're here in the studio also with Brian Cervani, our engineer-producer. You want to say hello, Brian?
Hello, Brian.
This show, Free Thought Radio, is the weekly production of the National Freedom From Religion Foundation. We, of course, are in favor of freedom for and freedom of religion, but our group is composed of atheists and agnostics and other types of non-believers who think it's very important to keep religion and government separate. So we educate and we broadcast and we litigate.
And we'll be talking about some of that litigation later. We have the pleasure of an in-studio guest today, Mike Konopacki. He'll be joining us on the second half of Free Thought Radio. Mike is a Madison institution. He's been drawing labor cartoons since 1978 and, of course, cartooned for the Capital Times, formerly the afternoon newspaper, for many years.
Mike will be speaking and showing his powerful show, One Nation Under God, Bible History, at the Freedom From Religion Foundation's upcoming 33rd National Convention, which meets at the Concourse Hotel right here in Madison, Wisconsin. Meets the last weekend of October, Halloween weekend. Sign up. See for yourself that the Bible isn't everything you may have thought it's cracked up to be.
There's full registration information at the FFRF website, ffrf.org/outreach/convention, and there's still plenty of time to sign up.
But before we talk with Mike, there's a lot more to report about the activities of freethinkers around the country.
And for fun, let's look at the famous non-believer of the week. We want to play a short excerpt of an interview from last Sunday's CBS Sunday Morning. This is Rita Braver interviewing renowned author Philip Roth.
Do you consider yourself a religious person?
No, I don't have a religious bone in my body.
You don't? So do you feel like there's a God out there?
I'm afraid there isn't, no.
You know that telling the whole world that you don't believe in God is going to say, you know, have people say, oh my goodness, you know, that's a terrible thing for him to say.
When the whole world doesn't believe in God, it'll be a great place.
Isn't that interesting that instead of defending against this idea that, wow, what a horrible person you are, he just comes right out and says, boy, what a great place the world will be when none of us believe in God anymore.
Last week, there was a development. Actually, there were two developments in FFRF litigation. We have seven current state church lawsuits.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation's federal lawsuit, which was filed in July of 2009, which challenges the religiously motivated engraving of In God We Trust and the Religious Pledge of Allegiance at the Capitol Visitor Center in Washington, D.C., it was dismissed. Not on the merits, but it was dismissed on the lack of taxpayer standing September the 29th. It was dismissed by the newly appointed U.S. District Judge William M. Conley, the Western District of Wisconsin.
The U.S. House and Senate had passed resolutions ordering the architect of the Capitol to engrave In God We Trust and the Pledge of Allegiance prominently at the Capitol Visitor Center. And for those of you who may not have visited the Capitol recently, the Visitor Center now serves as the sole point of entry to the seat of American government. Visitors must pass through there to get into the Capitol.
Our lawsuit pointed out the religious purpose behind those engravings. The resolution passed after religious right lobbying in a crusade also widely promoted by Newt Gingrich. and after expressly religious purposes were stated by the sponsors of the bill. The Freedom From Religion Foundation sued Stephen Ayers, who was the acting architect of the Capitol. The foundation sought a judgment declaring the congressional directive violated the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment and asking for an order enjoining the prominent engraving, which has since taken place, and has cost at least $100,000 or $150,000. For instance, Senator Jim DeMint, Republican of South Carolina, the Senate sponsor of the resolution, had threatened to hold up the opening of the center in December 2008, complaining that it shortchanged the importance of religion in federal government.
And also showing the religious intent of that legislation, U.S. Representative Steve King, Republican, Iowa, claimed that without the engravings of In God We Trust and the Pledge of Allegiance, the visitor center would reflect an effort, quote, to scrub references to America's Christian heritage, unquote, and to eradicate, quote, the role of Christianity in America, unquote.
Representative Dan Lundgren, Republican from California, sponsored the resolution in the House of Representatives for the express purpose of emphasizing the role of religion in the U.S. government. First, here's the CBN. CBN is the Christian Broadcasting Network. That's Pat Robertson's network. Here's their take on the decision last week.
The suit filed by the Freedom From Religion Foundation challenged engravings at the Capitol Visitor Center in Washington. The American Center for Law and Justice and others had asked that the lawsuit be dismissed. ACLJ founder Jay Sekulow said this challenge was another misguided attempt to alter history and purge America of religious references. The national motto and the pledge merely echo the sentiments found in the Declaration of Independence.
So, okay, what gets me is, first of all, the ACLJ is a Christian right law firm founded by Reverend Pat Robertson. They had filed a brief against us on behalf of dozens of members of Congress asking that our lawsuit be tossed. And the ACLJ's chief counsel put out a press release, as you also heard on the broadcast, claiming we are the ones trying to alter history.
Theocrats in Congress and in this country, they are the ones trying to alter history. Representative Greg Harper, a Republican from Mississippi, he put out a press release after our case was thrown out, in which he said, numerous sources point to our founders' collective reliance on God for direction and wisdom as they drafted the United States Constitution.
And that is a big, fat lie. There was no prayer at the Constitutional Convention, and we'll talk more about that in a minute.
So the judge dismissed the taxpayer standing of the individual plaintiffs. And who would those people be, Annie Laurie? That would be me and my co-host, Annie Laurie Gaylor.
It's hard not to take it personally.
When we have been personally injured by this thing. The judge claimed that there was no clear nexus. That's a big word in taxpayer standing, nexus, showing that Congress had specifically authorized money for those particular engravings.
Yeah, I thought nexus had something to do with hair care until I started running into this taxpayer standing business. The Senate approved the resolution on July 6th, 2009, and it was part of an express appropriation bill. So I don't get this decision by the judge. Courts are carrying to extremes this requirement that a specific congressional appropriation be passed to fund unconstitutional actions that it mandates or approves. Congress authorized the religious engravings. Congress controls the purse strings for the Capitol architect, who had to pay for the engravings out of those appropriations. How can that not show a nexus?
We contend that these engravings, quote, exclude and treat as outsiders millions of adult Americans who do not believe in a God. The mandated language diminishes non-believers by making God belief synonymous with citizenship. So are we going to appeal this dismissal?
We're considering all our options and probably refiling the case on grounds other than taxpayer standing because I'm getting tired of this fight. And if we can win on other grounds, that's what we'll do. But we'll keep you posted.
Well, either way, we could still forge ahead with this. And that brings us to our next news, which is the Freedom From Religion Foundation just filed our very feisty and complete response brief opposing the Obama administration's request to overturn our historic federal victory declaring the National Day of Prayer unconstitutional.
Okay, and so we'll quickly, it was a lot of work. The brief was written by FFRF litigation attorney Richard L. Bolton, but Dan and I and our attorneys, staff attorneys, and some of our interns all had some work in the process too.
So it's a fascinating brief, if we may say so ourselves. Next week, we'll have full news on the Friend of the Court briefs filed in our favor, and which we're very grateful for, but they will include an amicus brief filed by Americans United and co-signed by the ACLU.
And of course, you can read FFRF's brief online. You can read all the legal documents. They're up at the legal link at fffrf.org. But we'd like to talk briefly about some of the points in the brief.
You remember that federal judge Barbara Crabb's historic...
Well, that was a pun.
Oh, point out in the brief?
Briefly.
It's your week for jokes, right? I usually tell a joke, but yours are better. Judge Crabb, her historic April 15th ruling declared that the National Day of Prayer is unconstitutional and enjoined the president from issuing the proclamation pending the appeal. Crabb wrote that the National Day of Prayer's sole purpose is to encourage all citizens to engage in prayer, which is an inherently religious exercise that serves no secular function in this context. In this instance, the government has taken sides on a matter that must be left to individual conscience.
We noted in the FFRF brief that the presidential proclamation is as much a summons to prayer as the adhan that calls Muslims to prayer five times a day, and more powerful because it comes from the highest executive office. The brief recaps the religious history and purpose of the National Day of Prayer. On April 17, 1952, following Reverend Billy Graham's lobbying for an annual presidential prayer proclamation during his Christian crusade at the Capitol, Congress passed Public Law 82-324.
Which reads, "The president shall set aside and proclaim a suitable day each year, other than a Sunday, as a national day of prayer on which the people of the United States may turn to God in prayer and meditation at churches, groups, and as individuals."
And note the turn to God and note the reference to churches.
Who is this God that we're supposed to turn to?
And then their openly religious motives included instilling a faith in Almighty God and reaffirming in a dramatic manner the deep religious conviction which has prevailed throughout the history of the United States. That's in the congressional records. And then they also said the reason that they were passing a National Day of Prayer was because our founders prayed at the Constitutional Convention, that old lie, which we have thoroughly debunked. And then in 88, following lobbying by the Campus Crusade for Christ and other members of the National Prayer Committee, Congress changed what was a floating date to a fixed date, the first Thursday in May. It was the same language. And of course, we are contending that it's illegal and inappropriate for our president and Congress to exhort all citizens to turn to God in prayer, and that these references show a Christian bias. And if you want to read more about it, there's a great deal of interesting history that we debunk in this brief. Just go to our website.
We also point out that a lot less people believe in prayer than used to back in those years. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio. Coming up later in the second half of the show, we'll have a conversation with the cartoonist and artist Mike Konopacki and a birthday musical remembrance of John Lennon.
This is Richard Dawkins, author of The God Delusion. You're listening to Free Thought Radio.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker, and we're listening to a bit of Verdi, who shares October 9th as a birth date with John Lennon. Verdi was an ardent non-believer born in the year 1813.
And that's the drinking song from La Traviata, which sounds very cheerful, doesn't it? Verdi indeed was a lifelong non-believer. He was an atheist, and his wife was a believer, and she was really surprised. She says, you know, he doesn't believe in anything. He doesn't believe in God. I don't know if he's an atheist, but he doesn't believe in God, and yet he's such a generous person, such a giving person, and she just could not figure out how somebody could be so talented and giving.
Now, wasn't he an altar boy?
Yeah, he had been an altar boy, of course, in Italy, and he grew up to say, stay away from priests. And we don't really know why he said that, but we could speculate. There's a story about him getting mad with a priest who pushed him down the stairs. And the week later, that priest got struck by lightning.
The priest pushed Verdi down the stairs?
Yeah, because he was mad at how he was conducting some altar boy stuff. Who knows what was going on? But in any event, a lot of composers through history have been non-religious. A lot of the great music we've talked about on this show, and even some of the non-religious composers, like Verdi, wrote religious music. Verdi wrote a requiem based on the Bible, and yet the church thought it was too secular. They didn't want it to be performed, and yet he had so much power that he got it to be performed in a church anyway, with women singers in the chorus, which was forbidden. So Verdi was a non-believer, and of course, in recent times, John Lennon, they both share the same birthday.
Yeah, so let's listen to some more contemporary music, and of course, had John Lennon lived, as he should have, he was born in 1940, he would have been 70 today. And this is his song that doesn't get played as much as Imagine.
It's a later song. Earlier, he had some kind of religious ideas, but later in life, he became thoroughly non-religious.
And this song is just simply called God.
God is a concept. By which we measure our pain. I'll say it again. God is a concept by which we measure our pain, yeah, pain, yeah. I don't believe in magic. I don't believe in I Ching. I don't believe in Bible.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. After the break, we'll talk about some of those unpalatable passages of the Bible which Mike Konopacki has illustrated, which will be featured at our Halloween weekend convention here in Madison, Wisconsin.
I'm Wes from Alabama, and I'm on Free Throat Radio.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio.
And today we have in the studio with us a guest, Mike Konopacki. Mike is from right here in Madison, Wisconsin. He's been drawing editorial cartoons for the labor movement since 1978. In 1983, Mike and his colleague Gary Huck, who cartoonist for the United Electrical Radio and Machine Workers, UE, created Huck Konopacki Labor Cartoons. Since that time, Mike and Gary have published six collections of labor cartoons, By American, that's spelled B-Y-E, By American, Them, Mad, M-A-D, in USA, Working Class Hero, Two-Headed Space Alien Shrinks Labor Movement, I haven't seen that one, and his latest, American Dread. Mike's also drawn comic books and comics on the World Bank, welfare reform, and union organizing. Mike is co-author and illustrator of Howard Zinn's graphic history, A People's History of American Empire. In May of 2010, Mike earned his Master of Fine Arts in Art at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and he will deliver an ironic visual presentation called One Nation Under God, A Bible History, at the Freedom From Religion Foundation's upcoming convention on Halloween weekend here in Madison, Wisconsin. So welcome to Free Thought Radio, Mike.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Now, Mike, we don't really know that much about you. I was just asking you, are you from Wisconsin?
Well, I was actually born in Kansas, at Fort Riley, Kansas. My father was stationed there, but my parents are from Wisconsin, so we moved to Manitowoc when I was about 6 months old.
And so
I grew up in Manitowoc. I graduated from Lincoln High School in 1969 and moved here in 1971 to finish up college.
And did you major in...
I majored in political science.
Political science.
Yeah, and so what do you do with a political science degree? I ended up driving a bus for 17 years.
Really?
But I taught myself how to do political cartoons. I cut my teeth with Watergate in Vietnam, and I did a number of cartoons for the Daily Cardinal back when I was in school. And so when I got out of school, I wanted to be a political cartoonist for a daily newspaper. And in the meantime, I was driving a school bus. And in 1977, the newspaper workers at the Madison Capital Times and Wisconsin State Journal went out on strike, and they started their own paper called the Madison Press Connection. And so I submitted some cartoons that I had been doing, and they eventually asked me to be their cartoonist. So I did five cartoons a week.
I didn't realize that's when you started at the Capital Times. It was after the strike.
It was August of 78 when I started drawing I never worked for the Cap Times.
A freelancer?
Well, actually, I had submitted some work before the strike, but as a freelancer. And then after the strike, it was settled in the early 80s, and I think I started drawing cartoons for them after the strike was settled.
But you were still working with the Capital Times till the bitter end, right?
Oh, you mean when it became a web paper?
Yeah, I mean,
I still do a weekly cartoon for them because they have a weekly insert in the State Journal, and then they have it on the web.
So I saw it ever since I came here in 85. I've seen your work in the papers on various topics.
Well, and what happened at the Press Connection, because it was a strike paper, we did a lot of work about the labor movement and about unions. And so it turned out that what I was doing were called labor cartoons. And so as a result, I started doing a lot of work for labor union newspapers. And then I met Gary Huck, who was from Racine, and he was working for the weekly Racine Labor. And we met at a cartoonist convention and discovered that we were doing similar work. And so in 1983, we started our labor cartoon service.
But you draw on other things than labor. You've drawn on everything for the Capital Times, right?
Well, actually, I just do a weekly political cartoon. Yeah. And those cartoons focus on local and state issues.
So, and I think you were telling me that you were an altar boy, like Verdi.
Well, I grew up in Manitowoc. I went to two Catholic schools, Sacred Heart and St. Mary's. Sacred Heart was, I didn't start being an altar boy until I got to St. Mary's, but the nuns at Sacred Heart, the Franciscans, were just wonderful teachers. When I got to St. Mary's, the nuns were a Polish order called the Felicians, and they were a lot stricter and a little bit meaner, kind of a stereotypical nun. Hmm. And as an altar boy, we never had anything to do with the priests because the nuns took, they controlled everything.
They protected.
They ran, they ran everything. So the only time we saw the priests was, you know, during Mass, and that was it. We never saw them otherwise.
Maybe they knew something.
I don't know.
Like in doubt. Well, so I know that the Texas Board of Education vote last spring really riled you. It was when they were putting religion in and taking state church separation out of their history curriculum. And why don't you tell us what you did?
Well, part of the reason I got involved in this project called One Nation Under God was in 2007, I was accepted to the grad program at the University of Wisconsin, the art department. And it was partly because of the book that I had done with Howard Zinn and partly because of the 30-some years that I've been doing political cartoons.
That is a beautiful book, by the way. You gave me a copy. It's huge. You must have spent, what, a year?
Four years?
Wow.
It took 4 years. I mean, because that was a lot of drawing.
The entire history of American empire.
From the Battle of Wounded Knee in 1890 to basically the present. Wow. Because we ended talking about Iraq and Afghanistan, and so that's still going on. But the thing of it was that in grad school, you're supposed to be doing what's called research. And so when you do exhibits, you have to have research behind it. And the interesting thing at the University of Wisconsin, the art program is pretty apolitical. And so I think I was maybe one of two people that were actually doing political art at any time. And so we're required to do a master's exhibit and then a master of fine arts exhibit. So my master's exhibit was artwork from the book. And that's the People's History of American Empire. When we were doing the research for it, some of the most interesting things that I had not known about is it's based on Chapter 12 of Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, and it's called The Empire and the People. And it begins with the Spanish-American War. And the interesting thing is that McKinley, when they launched the war in the Philippines, because the Spanish-American War begins with the sinking of the Maine in Havana Harbor in Cuba, and that thing was a total fraud because it was all made up. It was an accident in a boiler on this ship, the Maine, and because in those days they had coal-fired ships, the coal dust created combustion, and the magazine was like in the next part of the ship. So when the coal exploded, all the torpedoes and all the weapons and stuff went up too, and so they just cut the ship in half and it sank. So the Fox News of the day,
Hearst
and Pulitzer, the New York Tribune and the New York World, went after this thing, or the New York Journal and the New York World went after this thing to sell newspapers. And so they blew this thing totally out of proportion and sold a lot of newspapers. But it was all on a bogus contention that the Spanish had actually torpedoed the Maine when, in fact, they didn't. And so the research that we were doing, we were finding out all this stuff, the parallels between the Iran-Iraq War and the Spanish-American War are uncanny. So then it was an opportunity for them to invade the Philippines, which had absolutely nothing to do with the Maine, but it was a colony of Spain. And Mark Twain, who wrote a lot, I mean, in his later years, he was a member of the Anti-Imperialist League, and he wrote a lot about the atrocities being taking place in the Philippines. And he blamed it a lot on religion, because he said, you know, these Christian butchers were slaughtering Muslim tribespeople in southern Philippines. And we have a little segment in our book called The Moro Massacre, and it's about 900 Muslim tribespeople that were slaughtered in the crater of an extinct volcano by American troops.
Wasn't the war prayer, Mark Twain's war prayer, was based on the Spanish-American
War? The war prayer was his response to the Spanish-American War. And I just discovered a made-for-TV movie that I bought on VHS, and it was called, I forget what it was called, but it was a story about the Civil War. And at the end of this movie, Edward Herman does the war prayer, and they set the whole thing up, and it's beautifully done. But it's that kind of stuff, and I include the war prayer in our in the art exhibit, and it's that kind of stuff. It was a discovery, and that was fun.
So you showed, used that exhibit for your class, and then you displayed it at Gates of Heaven.
Right, and so then for my master's thesis, I did artwork from the book. For my Master of Fine Arts thesis, I had to come up with another research project. And so what we did in October, well, actually a year ago, I worked with a group of 9 artists in Madison, and we created an exhibit called Extraordinary Renditions, The Stations of the Cross, and it was an artist's take on torture. And so what we did is we mimicked the Stations of the Cross, which is the Catholic Passion Play, and we had 14 stations, and then each artist took one of the stations and went through them, and they all, you know... It turns out that every one of the artists was Catholic except for one. So people latched on to the metaphor, and for that particular reason, it worked. And if people are interested in seeing it, they can go to gitmojesus.com, and the Extraordinary Renditions show is on that website.
Are we going to see that at the convention? Is that going to be
on? That one won't be there, but my MFA exhibit will be there.
Now, we have to go for a break, but before we go for the break, can you set it up? What exactly were you responding to with this?
Well, this the One Nation Under God, I was directly responding to the Texas School Board.
And exactly what was irking you about that?
Well, the Texas School Board has one of the largest markets for textbooks in the United States, 48 million textbooks. And so textbook publishers have to cater to what the Texas School Board decides is their curriculum. And so if they want to have a right-wing Christian agenda, then the publishers have to print textbooks that go towards that agenda.
And then they passed a series of resolutions that you respond to. We'll talk more specifically when we get back from our short break. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker here in the studio with cartoonist Mike Konopacki, and we'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Alex Wood, and I'm from Houston, Texas. I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we have in the studio Mike Konopacki, the political cartoonist and artist who will be displaying something at our convention this month.
And we are talking about his exhibit, One Nation Under God. And how about a sneak preview of what people can expect?
Well, it's going to be... religious iconography, they're digital engravings on aluminum plate that are 16 by 28, and they're called cathedral cabinet doors, but they're stained in there, and they look like they could hang in a church. And they were kind of inspired by my old Bible history, where you have all these little engravings of all the... you know, the wonderful events in the Bible.
But what's the idea behind the whole exhibit?
Well, the idea behind the whole exhibit is that if we are, in fact, a Christian nation, and that the Bible is the inerrant word of God, then what Christians have to do is they have to accept the fact that this godly behavior within American history included genocide, slavery, sexism, and war. And so what this religious iconography ironically does is it celebrates these Christian purposes sanctioned by the Word of God. And so each of the pieces has a biblical tract that justified, for example, Columbus justified his coming to America because he said he was ordained by God to come here. But then again, what he did is he ended up slaughtering millions of people. And so, but his idea was to come here to gather gold so that they could take over the Holy Land on another crusade. And so the whole idea is that each one of these images, and there's 12 images, and they're broken down into four sections, and one of them is the Indians. And so we talk about the Massachusetts Bay Colony, the settlement in the United States. We talk about...
That one really impressed me because you reproduced on that image the actual, what is it, a logo of the Massachusetts
Bay? It was the logo of the Massachusetts Bay Company. And this was, so basically it was a corporate venture because it was investors invested in this group of people to come there because they were going to make some kind of money. And so the whole idea was that when they met with the native people, the Bible said in Romans 13:2, whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. So during the Pequot War in the 1600s, they slaughtered, you know, hundreds of 600 Pequot souls were brought down to hell on the day of the
But describe
Pequot
what the actual logo of the Massachusetts Bay, what it actually
logo,
looks like.
In Latin, it has the name of the company, but then there's a picture of an Indian with kind of covered up by leaves, and the Indian's holding a bow in one hand and an arrow in another, and then then there's a banner coming out of the Indian's mouth that says, "Come over and help us." And so basically what the Puritans did is help themselves to the riches of the New World and their land.
I'm sure they were standing on the shore with open arms, "Please come over."
Yeah,
and help.
Right. They desperately needed help. So
now, you have another major section on slavery in the Bible, which is a terribly important section because that's why we had a civil war. And why don't you talk about some of
that? Well, see, part of what this process is, because again, as an art student, you have to do research. And so I couldn't use the Station of the Cross metaphor, which I was going to try to do, because it didn't fit. So what I did is I broke this thing down, and I had to do a whole lot of research. And the Curse of Ham, which is the story of Noah, turned out to be that was the justification for slavery. And so I read a couple of books about the Curse of Ham, and it was really interesting because basically Noah, they were saved by God after the flood. So they were the chosen people. So Noah falls asleep drunk. One of his sons, Ham, goes in and sees his father naked and comes out and says, "Hey, Dad is drunk and naked in the tent." And so his brothers, Shem and Japheth, took a garment, laid it upon their shoulders, and went backwards and covered the nakedness of their father. And so...
Ham was cursed.
Ham couldn't be cursed because he's one of the chosen, but his son Canaan was cursed. And so then the descendants of Ham were considered... They were supposedly the family that black people came from.
So you quote Bible verses. You show a yoked, tortured African slave. You have a section on Frederick Douglass being whipped. You have biblical justification for lynching, and then I'm moving right along because we're almost out of time. My favorite section: the Bible versus women, and you have something to honor Anne Hutchinson and something to honor Sojourner Truth, Ain't I a Woman,
right.
Alice Paul and Suffrage, showing the women.
And all of these things, every one of them has a biblical passage that justifies
that
behavior.
It. And then, of course, terribly important,
the section on war.
And the war prayer. And you've got a beautiful, beautifully illustrated Mark Twain's war prayer. And you have a prayer for old George Bush at the top. It's really beautiful because Dan and I got to see it in person, and it's extraordinary work, and we know everybody will learn a great deal by looking at it and seeing it. It's very powerful. And what were you going
to
say, Mike?
Oh, no, I just wanted to say that I think what has to be confronted when Christians say that we are a Christian nation, well, then we have to accept the fact that we do these things, that we engage in genocide, that we engage in slavery, we engage in sexism and war, and it's because the Bible says
it's
okay.
Because the Bible says so.
And so that was used as the justification.
Well, it's a really beautiful and powerful indictment, and we're really happy we're going to be able to share it with others.
And if you want to
see
it.
Well, I'm very happy that you invited me.
If you want to see it, come to our convention October 29th and 30th at the Concourse Hotel in Madison, Wisconsin. Thank you for being a guest on our show today,
thank
Mike.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
We also want to thank Brian Tarani. Brian is our hardworking creative producer and engineer of the show. And he's just started playing a little bit of Verdi, a little bit of what we heard before, the non-believing composer Verdi. We also want to thank our announcer, Buzz Kemper. Free Thought Radio was recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. Go to ffrf.org/radio for archives and sign up for the podcast.
Ask for more information at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Become a supporter, join us, ask for a complimentary issue of our upcoming, our new October newspaper, 24 pages, edited by Bill Dunn. Very good. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
When the whole world doesn't believe in God, it'll be a great place.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday you